Well, hello and welcome again. Welcome to The Disciplined Investor. This is Andrew Horowitz. You're listening to episode number 31 of The Disciplined Investor podcast. And I got to tell you, we had a great show last week, I think from the aspect of learning a little bit about what is day trading all about. Fausto Puglisi was here and he was helping all of us understand what day trading is and what day trading really is not. So many people had written me this week and said, oh yeah, I really want to take that course. And I think from my understanding from Fausto, at least, I don't know, we had 60, 70, 80 people taking that course last week through Cyber Trading University. So do me a favor. If you did, in fact, take that course, drop me a line. I want to know how it went. I want to know if you learned anything, what you learned, and if day trading is what you thought it would be. Send it to info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. All right, let's go through some of the things we're going to talk about today and then get right to our show. We have a wonderful guest with us today. Renowned economist Harry Dent is going to be with us and hopefully giving us some information we need. You know, he's really been right on, I mean spot on, when it comes to the current bull market. One of the sole voices back in the early 1990s in terms of this bull market, and has been predicting that it will continue on all the way through 2009, 2010. The big question is, what's going to happen then? I hope he's going to fill us in, because I want to know. And I'm going to ask him some questions, whether or not the world is ending or whether we have a little more to go. And also, last week I told you we were starting a new contest that I entitled, Are You the Next Peter Lynch? You know, Peter Lynch was a great investor, obviously the manager of the Fidelity Magellan Fund, and took it up to many billions of dollars of assets. And one of the things that he is known for is understanding investments, understanding what people are buying. He would stand outside of Walmart and maybe take a look at what people were buying and then go into that company, whether it was diapers or maybe Coca-Cola, Pepsi, whatever it was. And, you know, I do that a lot. I spend some time understanding, you know, what it is that I am doing personally. What is it that I like? For example, I looked at Shutterfly. You know, there's many different opportunities that you have and options to utilize photography developing solutions. You can go to Kodak, you can go to Sam's, you can go to Costco, you can go to Walgreens. You could, you know, send it into Shutterfly and other places. I love Shutterfly. I really do. I mean, I think that Shutterfly does an amazing job with my photos of my family. We make the books and we make mugs and we make postcards and all that. And I said, wait a minute, is this company public? Because if I'm liking this company, there's got to be a lot of other people that like this company too, right? So what I did was I researched the company and I found out what they were doing. I found out that they're really the top in their peer group. The competition is pretty meager when you look at them comparatively. And Shutterfly, we started investing. We made about 12 points recently in Shutterfly. As a matter of fact, I recommended that to you many times over the last number of weeks. Hopefully you are on board too, and you would have made about 10 to 12 points on there. Well, this contest is all about that. And what I want you to do is tell me what you think is the next stock, why it is that you're buying it. Give me some reasons, not only the fundamentals and the technicals, but tell me what it is that you like about the stock. Tell me really what it is that attracts you to the stock. Go to the site, because voting is open right now. Last week's top three are on there, and you can take a listen to it and vote. And of course, there are cash prizes, it's $50 actually, in the form of a Amex gift certificate and a copy of The Disciplined Investor, as well as the fact that the grand prize is, I don't know, it's worth about $1,000, the grand prize. So if you want to do so, send in your particular Peter Lynch-style stock pick. All of the information is right on the site with the telephone number. So go over to disciplinedinvestor.com and join in the fun. And finally, what is going on with the markets? We'll talk about, before we get to this interview with Harry Dent, what are we doing to pare back on the markets? Because I think that if we look at the economics right now, there's a couple of things we need to pay attention to and a few things that we're doing for our clients as advisors to make sure that they are hedged properly and protected. So with that, we're going to begin this week's episode, episode 31 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Here we go.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
Hi, this is Grammar Girl from QuickAndDirtyTips.com, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, so let's get into this discussion about what we're doing for our clients, okay? Because right now is an important time to start thinking about what is going on in your portfolio, What do you want to happen moving forward, and how are you going to protect yourself? Here's what's happening. Our economic models are showing us, obviously, oil's at an extremely high price. We're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood, about 86, could be about 95 by the time you hear this. Credit crunch is upon us, and we're seeing that the credit markets are relatively seized up, except for the fact that the Fed has come in and obviously done an amazing job at funding and flushing in some money into the markets. If you think about it, what would have happened if they didn't? The truth of the matter is it would have been quite a bad situation. Add to that the fact that the housing market all over the United States is in the toilet. And we have a real problem that is gathering because there's going to be the continuation of this seizure of the financial markets. Inflation is in check, of course, but the dollar being weak is not a good thing. Yes, it does help out our manufacturers, and I've talked about that time and time again, that domestically it is a big help. But the fact is that you add to the fact that we have a low dollar, we have the Iraqi situation and the war, the sucking money from us all over the place, and the market is getting extremely toppy. We have a real recipe for a pullback, a correction. The market moved up too quickly between the August low and the time where we're at right now in mid-October. And my feeling is that if you look at the models and you think about this logically, there is an opportunity for us to take a little bit off the table right now and be satisfied. Investing is not only about making money. It's also about saving money and protecting you from the losses incurred if the markets turn against you. So right now what we're doing is we have been pulling some money off the markets, out of the markets. We've been kind of giving ourselves a little bit of a haircut, a trimming, if you will. We made such a tremendous amount of money in Apple, Zoomies, in Shutterfly, and in the steel companies that we're just taking a little bit off the table, just a small amount off the table, taking some of our profits and starting to do so and reinvesting in things like the Prudent Bear Fund, which is a short fund that will benefit and will move up if the markets move down. We're also looking at the ProFund Ultra Shorts. And while we're at it, we're also going to be adding some short positions in SPY, which is the Standard & Poor's 500 index, and we're going short on that right now, just to make sure that we have a good, solid footing if this market does turn against us, which we do believe it is going to see a slight turn down now if, in fact, there are no other issues that come into the equation like further Fed cuts, etc. But right now is a very, very good time to start taking some money off the table. Finally, I wanted to talk with you about what I promised you last week, I believe it was, or the week before, is to start looking at what is a disciplined investor. You know, the whole idea of being a disciplined investor is a process that's ever evolving. And I write this in my book, that one is that is designed to help enhance market returns and limit the risk, which is what we're talking about now. Disciplines can be used on their own or as devices, as filter systems and filtering devices and strategies, if you will, in conjunction with each other in order to find investments that work in concert. Because really what we want to do here is have investments that work well together. It does not represent an excuse to blindly follow strategies that may have worked out over the last 12 months and just, well, what the heck, we'll just continue doing that. Nor is it a process that is sold to you by a stockbroker who, I guess, is trying to help you keep you out of the investment process altogether, because you are a part of the process. Now, these investment disciplines originate from just a tremendous variety of sources that utilize all sorts of techniques to find investments for different purposes. Yet, what we want to do is we want to find those investments that not only make money in the upside, if you will, but also have some downside protection. And what I like to call this is like an all-weather portfolio. Maybe you want to think of it as a balanced investment style. Whatever you want to call it, this combined result of utilizing investments both short and long that are diversified will really help you to weather many of the storms that are out there, the political, the economic, and many of the other downside moves of the market. And when we talk about a discipline, there are many that we can look at. So, for example, we talk about quantitative investing and quantitative analysis, the use of screens and screening devices to invest. We look at technical analysis, the art of using charts and technical indicators to figure out when it is time to invest. Risk management, utilizing portfolio insurance, like we're talking about from the aspect of shorting and being protective of our portfolio. Fundamental analysis, utilizing the technique of really understanding what a company is all about from the balance sheet and from aspects such as the cash flow and income statement. Another discipline is the utilization of mutual funds properly, utilizing a system to choose mutual funds that have low cost and really significantly beneficial, what we call risk-adjusted returns? And finally, what is the benefit of utilizing things like annuities and guaranteed investment contracts, as well as what are the tools of the trade? These are the kind of things we're going to be covering moving forward. Each and every podcast that we do in the future, every episode is going to have a little taste of it. Today, we talked about what is a discipline. We're going to be talking about quantitative analysis on the next podcast and give you some examples on how to use screens and what's it all about. These are all components of the book, The Disciplined Investor. You know, you did such a great job buying them. We sold out of our store. There's a few left at Amazon, and we have another printing coming because we were a little bit overwhelmed, actually, with what happened. But get your pre-order in if you want right now of The Disciplined Investor. And we come back, we're going to be talking about maybe the end of the bull market. Harry Dent's going to inform us what is going on in the future, how we can protect ourselves, when it's going to happen, and nail down really what is this whole idea of the next coming correction and crash of the markets. Stay tuned. It's coming up right now on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
All right, as I promised, we are here with a great guy. He's an economist. His name is Harry Dent. And he's written several books, and we've had him on before, actually, and I wanted to bring him back because we have such an amazing downloads, as well as the fact that a lot of people had commented to me in emails. And when are we going to have him back? So thanks for joining me today.
Nice to be here, Andrew.
Well, I thought we would start with the whole discussion about, you know, what's going on with the economy now, because last time we talked, I don't think we had the meltdown that occurred in July/August, and I want to see if you had any changes to your economic models and your thinking.
We've had minor changes on our forecast, but not because of this correction. We told people in our newsletter that, you know, this was like 1998. It was a scare. Yes, there's some problems here, but it's not going to tip the economy into recession. It'll work out. And we got what we love to see, a reverse head and shoulders pattern. It's kind of like a slingshot where something goes down. Everybody expects the worst to happen. And then when the Fed eases or people realize it's not going to be bad, it's just slingshots the other way. So we told people to buy here, not to buy the fear, but the fundamentals were still good enough and the market was going to continue up. And here we are pretty close. We had targets of 2,900 on the NASDAQ and 1,620 on the S&P, and we've already gotten close to those targets that quick.
So you say that you mentioned the head and shoulders, and you talked about how that you recommended to buy. And my understanding, and I've done a good amount of studying of your work, and my understanding is, for the most part, you've been extraordinarily, if not, you know, ultra bull for many years. So is there any time that during this time period of the last couple of years, and maybe even into June or July, that you said, hey, you know what, you need to back off for a while?
Yeah, we do tell people when we see corrections coming, and we've pretty much called all the ones since the bottom in 2002, but we made a major change in our forecast in September, October of 2006, a little over a year ago, because we had been tracking, you know, the crash and the rally against the 1990s correction and bull and bubble market developed and the 1920s, which we were comparing this to, and we started getting divergences only for the first time in the summer of 2006 when oil prices hit $78. So we said, hey, we're getting divergences. We're not tracking the bubble. A lot of people were saying, oh, stocks are slow to come back, but they are always slow to come back in the next bubble. So we started looking at the oil price trends, commodity trends, and the worsening geopolitical environment, and we have adjusted our targets for the Dow to between 18,000 if it peaks in late 2008, which we think is more likely, and as high as 20,000 if it continues up into 2009. And we have now really studied and plotted commodity and oil cycles. And oil's due to peak by our models at about $110 to $115 in late 2009, early 2010. And we think as we get into 2009 that oil bubble and commodity bubble and some rising inflation pressures in the labor economy by another model of ours are going to start to put pressure on stocks. So we're saying, you know, this bull market's going to end probably peak late 2008 instead of late 2009, And we're looking at the Dow going closer to 18,000. So that was a big adjustment
from
our bubble targets of 32,000 plus in
right.
the last book.
Well, what's interesting is that, a lot of things I believe that are central to the themes of where the markets are going from your work has been much based on consumer and consumption issues. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, we look at the demographics of when people, borrow, spend, save, invest money, and yes, that tells us where the economy's heading decades in advance, not just years.
So here's my question. We have oil prices that are incredibly high, as a matter of fact, historically high, reaching somewhere over 80 right now per barrel. And then
yeah.
you have a situation where credit is really tight right now because obviously there was this ridiculous amount of exuberance when it came to housing, and people did things that really were not in the best interest. Well, companies did, like mortgage companies, allowed people to do things that really were not in their own best interest. And so now we have these two things happening. So we see this huge decline in the markets from, I think, when we had this awareness back in July, or at least an admission that there was something going on. And here we are. What is, aside from all the other things that you have in terms of your demographic models, what else is there that could really do some damage to this market?
Well, again, I think the biggest enemy of the market right now, and we do, as I kind of hinted a few minutes ago, we do agree more with Alan Greenspan. He says he thinks inflation is going to come back to 4% and as high as 5%, and that's what our labor force models say, and that's where we get our closest correlations. That rising inflation raises bond rates and then makes stocks less attractive relative to bonds as investments. Now, people are still in shock over the 2000-2002 crash. It was so extreme to occur within a bull market that, the stocks have remained undervalued in the U.S. I mean, they've been racing in Europe and in Asia and emerging markets. I mean, the bubbles there are off the charts. As strong as the bubbles we had in the NASDAQ in the 90s, but the markets have been more muted here, which we've adjusted for in our forecast now with a new geopolitical cycle. But what we don't want to see is bond yields go from 4.5 to 5.5 to 6.5, and I think that's going to happen. I think what we said in our most recent newsletter is it's actually a bit of a blessing that this credit crunch looks like it's going to slow the economy again on about a 6 or 8 month lag into early next year, and this whole housing slump, that is probably going to keep inflation at bay, and then somewhere in the latter part of 2008, it's going to start resurging. And I think that's going to be the first thing that cuts in the markets. Oil prices start to hit $100 instead of 80, and you got inflation bumping 4% instead of 2. And everybody's saying, oh my gosh, stagflation, this is looking like the 70s, and the ultimate surprise is going to be a few years later, we're going to be in a deflationary environment.
So actually, in a really odd way, the fact is that the oil price is at a high level, and credit crunch or a lack of credit is kind of almost an inflation protective measure by that. Instead of the Fed having to raise rates, instead of anybody having to do anything, it's almost like a natural process that allows for less consumption, which of course yields less demand, which yields a lower inflation potential.
Yeah, and it has kept our economy slower than it would be, and slower than economies outside of the United States. But in the case here where we have the stock market being more sensitive to low bond yields and being undervalued, and that's what's keeping any correction at
right.
a minimum. That I'd almost rather see that slowing than see a 1% or 2% higher consumer growth. Yeah, that would give us a little higher earnings.
Right.
But boy, again, if bond yields went from 4.5 here or 4.6 to 5.5 in a short period of time, I think that would hurt the stock market more.
Yeah. Well, I want to skip to something that's really focused on the idea of technical analysis. Chapter 3 of my book, I start out with this comment. I say there are three basic premises that technical analysis is predicated upon. Market have trends, markets are efficient, and history repeats itself. And then I say the latter is only true because people are creatures of habit. And during our lifetimes, we will tend to react in the same condition in a similar fashion every time. And again, you came up with this point, and you actually very well, I'm quoting from you, it says Harry Dent has called this the human model of forecasting. Now, I bring that up because you said just a moment ago that, we're still stung by the 2000 through 2002 market disaster. Way back in the 70s and 80s, we're still talking about the depression from the 30s and 40s, 30s with people, and the hard times of the 60s with mutual funds, et cetera. Where does that play into where we are right now with how the market is moving in terms of the potential for, you know, capping off the upside short term, or where are we playing with this whole idea?
Well, you know, right now the technical indicators show that unlike the boom in the 90s, I mean, we showed in our newsletter back in October 2006 that earnings were actually stronger than they were in the 90s. It's just the stock market and investor reaction to them has been more muted. People are still reacting to the shock of 2000, 2002 irrationally. Mm-hmm. The more people see a market go down, the more they see risk in it, when it ought to be the opposite. The same thing, the more they see a market go up, the longer it goes up, the more risk in it, because stocks get overvalued. But people just think in this kind of straight line human model, oh, if it goes up, 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 it's a steady trend. No, markets go up and down. They're exponential when they go up, and they're cyclical. They go up and down exponentially. So people should be the most cautious when stocks have gone up too much, and they should be saying, oh my gosh, everything's on sale. As long as the fundamentals are good, we ought to be buying like crazy when they go down too much. Instead, what the technical indicators show is that the smart money's buying in this market, but the everyday investor, every time we make a new high, they're skeptical and they think it can't go any higher. And they're just most people are continuing to miss this bull market.
Yep.
Now that tells you the market's got higher to go. But I think on this round, because of the geopolitical cycle, because of rising oil prices and interest rates start to rise in the next year or two to join that, the market's just going to be fighting more headwinds, and we will probably not get, almost certainly not get to the same overly bullish state that we got in the late 1990s. I mean, that was the clearest sign when everybody thought you couldn't lose. Everybody's pouring. When I got old ladies, old relatives, you know, from South Carolina calling me up saying, hey, if I want to get in the market, what do I buy? I mean, you know, it's over.
Right.
And yet that's when even old ladies are ready to come in and buy, you know, tech stocks. So that's the same thing. They watched it go up, you know, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, hardly take a correction, and people start saying, man, you can't lose. No, that's exactly when you've got the highest chance of losing. So we're just bad. Something about our human creative tendencies and intelligence has made us the most adaptive species on the earth, but it has not made us the best investors, especially when it comes to short-term signals.
Well, but compared to other animals, I think we're probably better.
Yeah. Well, no, these monkeys with boats right. always beat humans with brains.
Right, I hear you. Right. So now, that's an interesting thing, because I've watched, I don't know if you watch the ticker. You get up in the morning, you're kind of getting yourself ready, you watch the ticker, and China, this is up $8, and China, that is up $4. And every day there's a new China something up, 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 up. And I have a question for you, and I may have posed this to you before, and I know it's a little strange, but there's give a billion or two, 3 billion people in the China region, right, in China.
And 1.3 billion in China, and I think about 1.1 in India.
Right. Okay. Well, how much in China now?
1.3.
I thought those. Well, maybe it's right.
It's four times our population, to put it in perspective.
So
four times.
So I have this really weird thought. You know, you have a billion people. A billion people are eating. A billion people, maybe on average, they eat a chicken a week. Maybe. Where are they putting all these chickens? I know that's kind of crazy, but I'm talking consumption discussion here, right? I mean, we're talking a lot of chickens. We're talking a lot of eggs. We're talking a lot of butter, a lot of cars, potentially a lot of cigarettes. We're talking a lot of, I mean, soap. I mean, it's amazing, these numbers of the potential of what has to be done for the amount of people that are currently on this earth. And I think brilliantly, the Fed has actually helped to really enhance the exports right now by reducing the dollar and keeping it low, because right now, that's what's helping us so dramatically, because our dollar is so low and we're just doing so much in exports right now. Where is this whole population expanse fitting into all this?
Well, the thing is, I mean, again, the per capita GDP in China is still only 8,000. It's like about less than a third or even a quarter of what it is in the United States. Mm-hmm. But yes, they do buy basic stuff like chicken and cement and things like that. They don't drive cars nearly as much as us. They certainly don't use computers and high technology as much as us, or high level services or financial services or even healthcare.
But is that now, or is that just now, or is that changing?
Well, that's not, because they're emerging. I mean, in 10 or 20 years, they'll be closer in wealth to us and stuff. And in a place like Hong Kong, and in their most in the wealthiest parts of their biggest cities, like Shanghai, yeah, these people live pretty much like we do. But 60% of their population still sitting out in the country in rice paddies or dying of cancer is the fish turnip dead coming down the stream by them from the plant way up the river and stuff. So, you know, China's like two very different economies. So until all of that catches up, it's going to be different. But that's one of the reasons we have a persistent rise in oil prices, coal prices, basic materials. Commodities are on a tear. And again, our cyclical analysis shows that that should peak. We got a very clear peaks historically in commodity and oil price cycles about every 29 to 30 years. The last one was in 1980, if people remember, when gold was at, what, at 500 or something?
Yeah, that was fun.
Projected to go to 5,000. Oil was at 40, projected to go to 100.
Right.
We had a peak back then, big drop off, even with a boom, and now we're set to have a peak a couple of years from now. But hey, yeah, because China and India and these countries, what they do buy is mostly basic stuff, and now we're competing with them to that, and it's driving up the price of everything, you know, wheat, gold, oil, you name it.
Mm. So what's your forecast on this whole world situation when it comes to the now potential for Gore running in this race, which, you know, he won the, I think it was announced this morning.
Yeah, Nobel Peace Prize.
He won the Nobel Peace Prize for some of his work. I mean, does that change some of your thoughts on the future? Because whether you like him or not, the fact is the guy has a draw.
Yeah, no, he has a draw. I don't really, I don't think he's really positioned here. I think he's positioned to come in if Hillary really starts failing, and Hillary is not failing here.
Yep.
She's doing very well. She's surprised people. I mean, yeah, about 40% of the people in the country hate Hillary, but everybody else is saying, hey, she's looking pretty darn competent and balanced and better than anybody else on that side. And secondly, I mean, he has so positioned himself on this global warming thing, which is a great thing for him to do. It's a whole niche, you know, fits all the research he's done. But, you know, that doesn't make him a balanced president. It makes him look like he's the global warming guy. Well, global warming is growing in interest on people as an issue, but it's still nowhere near the Iraqi war and health care and the economy and these other broad issues. So I really don't think, I think the way he's gone, he's made it more difficult to actually run for president, even though he'd have a strong following, and I only think he could have a shot at it if Hillary started failing in some major way, and she hadn't given him that opening yet.
Right, I hear you. Let me skip over to this. One of the things that always fascinated me, and I got to tell you, you know, I'm a kind of a, you know, like a Harry Dent roadie kind of guy. I mean, I love your work. You know that. I've told you that 100 times. And one of the things that I've always just been fascinated, and I have it kind of imprinted in my head when I walk around looking for something like Peter Lynch style, is this. This S curve of adoption. And we've talked about this on this podcast before, but you know, one of the things that obviously you talk about is the technology S curve. You know, we have these rooms filled with huge computers that now essentially can be held on a thimble, the same power, right? And
yeah.
So we saw, I think, the last of the or the final phase of the S curve when it came to computers, I believe, with the Apple iPhone, which is really forget the computer, the phone part of it, but it's a computer, essentially. It's a handheld, powerful computer.
It's a handheld computer, exactly.
You know, and happens to be a phone with it. Where, I asked you this last time, and I'm going to pin you down again, what is the next exciting S-curve that is beginning?
Well, you know, if you have to point to one, you'd say nanotechnology, but that is in such an early stage. I mean, S-curves are in more of an invention or a very early market stage for many, many years until they get to the point of significant commercialization. Automobiles were invented in 1886, but they didn't really set up the first significant plants and started selling cars to back then, 1 out of 1,000 households until 1900. So that was a 14-year period.
Mm-hmm.
We think there's going to be a combination of nanotechnology, robotics, and biotech, as well as alternative fuels and energies that are going to drive the next S-curve. But that's going to take, this one's peaking out. We're at about 80% penetration or more on all the key things, internet, wireless, cell phones, broadband. Once you hit 90% of households, man, I mean, everybody's got them. And like you say, I agree. I felt like the iPhone was like the finale in cell phones. And once everybody's got one of those in the next year or so, yeah, they can improve them and stuff. But hey, we've got powerful computers in our hands that can do just about anything. That's the end of the revolution for now.
Right.
And it's probably going to be the early 2020s until we see a wave of technologies that are really moving mainstream. I don't mean just into business and a few little niche applications here and there, like nanotechnology or alternative energy today, but they're really moving mainstream. I think we're, a decade and a half away from that.
You know, I don't know if other people have the same reaction, but, you know, a lot of times you talk in decades, obviously. You know, you talk about 2010, 24. You start talking, you know, in 2020, 30, I start to get a little bit, like, glossy-eyed. It's very, very difficult to project and even envision what that's going to be. My kids, I have twin girls that are 16, and they look at me strangely when I, you know, talk about the days that there wasn't a computer. I mean, and when we didn't have and really the computer, if you really think about it, just for a moment, here we are in 2007, the latter part of 2007. Computers as we know it today have only been around really 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. I mean, it really wasn't as powerful and as ubiquitous as it is today, right? I mean, it wasn't.
Right. I mean, yeah, we had PCs starting to come on the stage in niche markets in the late 70s, early 80s, you know.
Yeah, but they weren't being used for anything more than just, you know, really hardcore business applications.
Yeah, yeah, and you couldn't sit there and talk to people around the world on them on the internet.
Right, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I think, as we get more and more advanced, by the way, as a side note, you know, emailing is a disaster these days. You almost want to go back to faxing because you know they get their hands on it. You know,
that's another thing. Technologies succeed, but they also have their difficulties and their challenges. And now that everybody's got all this stuff, I mean, yeah, the internet has strong strengths and things for society, but there's strong disadvantages, more fraud and all types of stuff, and can be committed on this and the terrorists can use it and everything else, and it can be so overused that you don't even want to get on it, you know,
exactly.
Because you get spammed to death or and stuff. So all this stuff has to be worked out. And again, that's why, you know, when you talk about us talking about decades, we look over, you know, cycles in technologies and generational cycles, which are crystal clear. We have a 12 to 14 year downturn every 40 years, and people act like, you know, it's getting cold in November and what the hell happened? It's
right.
Crazy.
Right.
We're just looking at a cycle on a bigger time frame, and it is clear to us that we're near the end of what we call a growth boom, a bubble boom, like the Roaring Twenties. We're going to see a depressionary, deflationary era, not as serious as the 30s, but pretty darn serious. Real estate's going to go down, stocks, commodities, everything. And we're going to merge into the next kind of 40s, 50s, and 60s like boom starting in the early 2020s. That's very clear on our cycles. And it's a matter where we get off is magnitude. We slightly underestimated the boom of the 90s. We underestimated the crash at first, although we caught up on that. And now we've overestimated in the early stages this next bubble, not overseas, but here. But we always get the long-term direction and the approximate time periods are pretty accurate because these cycles are a lot more
right.
predictable than economists think or know.
Well, one of the things, I'm reading your last newsletter, and by the way, just to mention that, as we did the last podcast, I'll have a link to the various downloadable newsletters and to your site so people can grab this because, you know, they have written a wonderful, wonderful piece. This is one I'm looking at from back in July. I believe there's another one probably coming out for a sample that is for free. People then can, of course, subscribe. But you had in here that one of the allocations for portfolios for growth investors, 15% technology, 10% healthcare, 10% financial, 10% mid-cap, 10% basic, et cetera, a little bit of Asia, ex-Japan, et cetera. Why should we even consider being this diversified in this manner versus just saying, okay, you know what, let's just give it to a standard index fund, which is part of this, of course, but just, you know, throw it into an index fund, 70% domestic and 30% international, and just go to sleep.
Well, yeah, part of what we do is we focus on ETFs for people who want to go direct, and we have tightened our allocations the last few months more towards emerging markets. The EEM is an index on that, or EEB, more towards the large cap tech stocks rather than some of the other sectors, the QQQQ. And Asia, EPP. So we've been increasing our allocations there, and we've been adding allocations to energy and basic materials. So, I mean, these are the areas that are leading. We feel like we have really probably one more year, possibly two, but probably one more year in this bull market before we start to get adverse trends long term from the fundamentals and nearer term from inflation and oil prices.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really need to be in the best sectors and take advantage of this. I mean, some of these emerging markets, China and India and stuff, look like they could double in the next year. But
yeah.
After that, they could crash unbelievably in the few years to follow that. In fact, we're going to have a new book coming out probably January of 2009. It's probably going to be named Bubble Boom, Bubble Bust. And we're going to be saying the next crash is probably going to start to set in 2009 but you're going to see the worst of it from late 2009 to late 2010, and the emerging markets are going to lead that.
So what if you're wrong? I mean, obviously that's what you go through every day. All right, where are my forecasts? What do I have to adjust? Here's my question. What if you're wrong on the 2009, 2010? It's really going to back up because, you know, we believe in market efficiency, don't we? I mean, you do, right?
Yeah, but see, we keep – one of the things we do over time, and one of the good things is when we're wrong, when we get divergences, like in 2006, summer 2006, it shows us that we're missing something, and we dig. We don't sit there and defend the past. We dig until we find and see if we can plug that hole.
Right.
And so we keep increasing our cycles. The reason I'm so keen on late 2009 to late 2010, every cycle we have, four-year, decennial, 29-30-year commodity cycle, baby boom generational cycle, technology, every one of those is turning down by then. I will eat my hat if we don't have some type of crash by late 2010.
I hear you.
In all public. Right.
In public, okay, good.
And
we'll put on YouTube.
Thing we do on newsletters, we track more the technical indicators as we get close to these points. And if the technical indicators don't show that the markets are getting overvalued or something like that or overbought, then we may extend out our forecast.
Right, exactly. Let me tell everybody, by the way, because it's coming up rather soon at the Intercontinental in Tampa, October 31st through the 1st, you're having the HS Dent Demographic School. And this is, again, we'll put a link on the site for this, but it says here that by attending the course, you'll get the tools necessary to estimate the changes ahead and forecast growth. And what's this all about and who should really attend this?
Well, this is an in-depth course. I mean, we have our newsletter for people to keep up with their work and a lot of special reports. But for people, financial advisors and business people, we're finding that really want to get steeped in our stuff and really learn it. And even more than coming to a one-hour public seminar we give at times, this is a day-and-a-half thing, and we go through all the stages of the technology cycle, all of the aspects of our demographic research, down to potato chips, how it affects your kids, how it affects your real estate, how it affects your life, your business, not just your investments. And so we find that when people come out of that, they go, oh, holy smokes, this is important. I need to use it in my business, and I need to use it in my financial practice.
Right. I guess in closing, I have one question, and that goes back to the last thing I mentioned about what if you're wrong. And is there some sense in thinking about my portfolio is, you know, X amount of dollars, and yeah, I want to make money, but I realize that sometime in the future it's going to be moving down in the markets. And again, keeping this very simple, does it make sense to consider looking at now is a time to start putting yourself or at least getting ready for a defensive position? Maybe not entirely, because look what happened with the housing market. It happened quickly. I mean, it was just...
Yeah, but we forecast that one.
I know. I agree. But what I'm saying to you is that does it make any sense at all for people to start at least getting, I guess, you know, getting ideas of what to do now in order to protect themselves later?
Yeah, no, I think now, and some people may want to phase into this, what we say in a bubble-like environment, I mean, you often make the greatest gains in the last 6 months or 12 months, and you can have the biggest crash often in a short period of time. So if you do it too gradually, you know, it kind of doesn't work. It's almost better to be a little early than late. But we look at the technical indicators again. We saw more fear and panic on this last sell-off into August 16th than we saw at the bottom in October of 2002. That told us, look, this is too early to get out of this market. There's too much fear. We're going to turn around boomerang and see another good year or so in the market. So we want to see some signs, not just from our long-term indicators, but from our technical indicators, that it's time to get out. We got very, very good indicators in early 2000. It was off the charts. Overly bullish, and we warned.
Well, I think that everybody has to wake up and open their ears and put their antennas up, because a lot of times you can tell people, you can talk about it, and they just don't want to listen because it seems very counterintuitive, much of the things that – that are happening. If the market is moving up like crazy, why should I get out now? I mean,
it's really hard to talk people out of a bull market or to talk people into a bottom. But you know, that's one of the lessons you got to learn by observing these cycles. And you got to listen to people and say, look, who are the people that most often call us? Because like you're saying, nobody's always right. I mean, you can't be right all the time.
Right.
But you can be more on the ball or not, and you can also be quick to change. What we find with most economists, when things go against their forecast, they just try to defend it and explain it instead of digging to see, well, what did we miss?
Right, exactly. All right, great. Well, this has been a great conversation, and we're going to hopefully do it again and keep this going. Harry Dent, author, economist. His books are available at bookstores, Amazon.com, right on his site. We're going to put links to everything that he has right on his site. And if you can get to Tampa, I think that the October through the October 31st demographic school will probably be great. So thanks so much for gracing us and giving us some great things to chew on and to think about.
Okay, thank you, Andrew.
As promised, if you do want the reports from Harry Dent, head on over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I'll make sure there's some links in the show notes and other areas so you can get your free report on the economy and what's ahead of us. That about wraps it up for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Make sure that you do enter the competition, the contest, Are You the Next Peter Lynch? Plenty of information about what to do, how to do it, and some examples on the disciplinedinvestor.com website. Look forward to seeing you again real soon, and we'll be here again next week talking about money, hopefully making you some money from some of our ideas. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, have a great week, safe investing, profitable investing. Be well, be good. See you soon. Bye-bye.
If you like what you hear, we want to know. Go to our show's listing on either iTunes or your favorite podcast directory and leave us feedback and a rating. The more feedback we have, the higher our position on the charts. Think of it as the price of admission. It only takes a minute and helps us understand more about what interests you. Keep our blog and podcast popular, and we'll keep providing you with great investment ideas. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.